This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Blue Monday podcast covering Ipswich since 2015. My name is Benjamin Bloom, and you are watching or listening to the flagship show available each and every Monday. So for a sometimes entertaining, always informative hour or more football conversation, make your Monday Blue Monday. As Dave would say, let me stop you there. If you're listening on the podcast, head over to YouTube because it's a very special show today. We are celebrating going past 500 episodes of the Blue Monday podcast. I think we're at 502 today, given our prodigious output during the week. And we look like the Brady Bunch, someone said in the chat, because there's seven of us here. Let's say hello to Mikey Penty-Smith. Hello.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me, Ben.
You're very, very welcome.
Got the call up for the seven aside.
Yeah. All the good people didn't turn up, yeah?
Yeah, none of the good ones turned up.
Yeah?
You know.
Richard, you're here as well.
I'm here as well. I'm enjoying this. I'm just waiting for it to all go technically wrong, but so far,
well,
so good.
You've been very professional. It has already all gone technically wrong, hasn't it? And this is... We're 6 minutes into a recording, but you're only going to hear the last minute of that.
I'll stick the bloopers up on our YouTube channel later on, yeah.
Please don't. Craig Fimbo.
Fimbo.
Hello. The return of the lost Palmer 7.
Oh, now you're talking. Now you're talking.
Oh, well, that's David Diamond. David.
Hello.
And you've got some good news about your genetic offspring, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm expecting. We're going to welcome a little granddaughter into the family in April. First one.
And as much as your wife wouldn't have minded what gender the baby was going to be, she's not unhappy that it's female.
Quite delighted about it, I think it's fair to say, yeah.
Joe Fares, out of shot, has toilet roll. And he's not going to speak, apparently.
Man flu, isn't it?
I was going to say, Joe, it's for a cold, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm hoping to be clear of it by tomorrow. I've got a big meeting in Brightlandsea tomorrow, so I'll be down on Craig's tomorrow.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Right, we're going to do an important technical test that's going to be so slick, you're not going to notice. Seb, unmute yourself. Seb.
How you doing? You okay?
I'm all right. We got a little bit of echo, didn't we?
Yeah, I'll ride the mute button, don't worry.
You ride that. Actually, leave yourself unmuted. I think it's sounding all right now. So, yeah, we could just go around and have a nice chat. You're still thinking about the bad news, aren't you? We're going to get out Ben's swingometer for the first time in the show tonight. Now, you've only got 3 seconds to answer, and I'm going to come round in the order. We did this on show 400. So, from the moment the final whistle went on podcast show number one in August 2015, August the 9th, how many league positions have Ipswich Town dropped? Mikey Penty-Smith, what's your answer? Three, 25. Two, one, 25. Richard Woodward, what's your answer?
30.
Craig Fimbo.
Yeah, 31.
Joe Fares.
Then my two answers gone, so I'll say 29.
Seb.
27.
David Diamond.
28.
Okay, there we go. Mikey Penty Smith, what was your thinking? Or do you just know the answer?
You put me under pressure. I'm just a really smart bloke, basically.
We have dropped 25 places. So after drawing with Brentford 2-2 on the opening Blue Monday podcast of all time, Ipswich were ninth in the championship. That's 29th in the pyramid. They're currently 10th in League One, which is 54th in the pyramid. So that is a drop of 25 places. We will be revisiting Ben's swingometer later. I'm like Peter Snow, aren't I? But we've delayed it long enough. Like David and Seb, we are off to Sunderland. David, you were there. Tell us about this away pub and this singer-songwriter. Mainly words, man.
Different gravy. So the Wheat Sheep, which I think Craig had been to before. So yep. It's a designated away pub, literally, 300 or 400 yards away from the stadium. And it's a guy called Wee Philly, obviously a Sunderland fan who sort of comes on with a very silly top hat. Obviously, he was getting no end of dogs. He was getting dogs abuse from the Ipswich fans for that. But yeah, it was good. He does a bit of DJing. He's playing a bit of jam and stuff like that. It was great. And he was getting these, I mean, you can tell what sort of how it was going to turn out. Second Ipswich guy got up and he was getting them to sort of go on stage and play little games. Basically, this guy... they made him strip down to his boxes and then made him walk outside. So it was a big bay window. They pulled back the curtain. So he was outside the pub. Then he had to do 20 star jumps outside the pub on the pavement. that was a kind of pre-match entertainment there. It went down an absolute storm. The place was absolutely rocking, but my God, it was hot and it was packed.
Before you got on, we were deriding Mikey for... watching I'm a Celebrity and that being lowbrow, yeah?
Yeah.
Northern culture.
But however, what he did say, which obviously did win, it did certainly win favour with the town fans. I think it was the best following they'd had in a pub from an away team so far this season. So,
the chills were a ringing. Seb, were you in this pub?
No, I walked past it and saw how big it was.
I thought he was going to say, no, I walked past and saw Dave, so I just kept on going. Yeah.
I saw how busy it was and kept walking and went to a similarly rammed pub, but there was no entertainment there, unfortunately.
Oh, sensational. Joe, was I wrong to be optimistic? Mikey, I still have Mikey's words in my head about Ipswich not turning up and winning a hard game for the last 15 years. And then off they go to Wickham. What were your thoughts going into this one, Joe?
I was quietly confident for the game. I think Sunderland looked a team that were there for the taking, and sort of I only listened to the game on Suffolk yesterday, and Alex Maffey repeatedly said, this game is there to be won. We just need to go and win it. Like they looked shell-shocked, but it was a case of needing to score when we were on top.
Craig, here is your Ipswich lineup. It was Welton in goal, Danasian, Enciala, Edmondson, Clements gets another start, Evans, Morsi, Luko, Selena, Edwards, and Bon. Thoughts on that, Craig?
Just a bit of a shame that Burns was injured, injured really, because they had a makeshift left back. No, Luko 9 was playing left back, and I don't think the Sunderland fans particularly rate him as a midfielder, and they don't particularly rate him as a right back. And he was not even playing either of those two positions. He was a out of position left back. But unfortunately, we didn't really have a flying winger to take him on. But I think pretty much the only other two positions would have been the other two behind Bond. Really, was the number 10, which could have been Selena or Chaplin, and Edwards might have been Fraser. Really, so. Yeah, no real complaints before the match. You know, just you, these guys can't argue they're not being given a fair crack of the whip, can they?
You agree with that, Rich?
Yeah, I agree with Craig. I mean, we're debating on the pre-match show about Selena and Chaplin. It does feel exceedingly harsh, and Chaplin himself has said he thought it was a bit harsh as well. Maybe not those words because you're not going to bury your manager in the press, but and I guess worth mentioning that Bailey Clements got another run out at left back, and certainly a much more daunting prospect for him than Oldham away and Portman Road, which is a a friendly crowd that's going to support one of their own. So good to see that continuity for him, because if he's going to make that left back spot his own, he needs to play games there. But yeah, I think Chaplin's been quite hard done by. And yeah, we did speak about Bonn needing maybe a bit of time out of the limelight as well to regroup as well. But who's going to come in and start at Sunderland away? No one really. So no real arguments for that.
Sunderland 11 here. Ron Thorben Hoffman. That one caught me out. I should have done my research, shouldn't I? Onine Doyle Wright Winchester. Evans Neil. Broadhead Embleton. Gooch and Stewart. Mikey, Sunderland started the season very, very well, didn't they? We all kind of like, oh, finally, okay. This is the season Sunderland get things together and score 90 points and get promoted, etc. But bit of a drop off recently. What were your thoughts having seen both 11s?
Well, looking at the teams on paper, I think we've got the stronger team, but I think we'd lost a little bit of confidence in the last few games. So I did wonder whether we were going to score in this game. And I quite fancied Rich's 0-0 prediction, because I thought that we'd be pretty solid, and it sounded like for most of the game we were, but we didn't really, well, we never seemed to carve open loads of chances. And I just saw us going up to Sunderland, and I know this is maybe a bit of a football cliche and this is what fans of all teams say, but I'm always more worried when we play a team that's a decent team that's out of form. I always feel like they're about to turn it on against us. I think all fans say that, but I guess we've got Rotherham on Tuesday night, and I'm not sure I'll be any more confident going into that one because they're absolutely flying, aren't they?
Right, let's lean on Seb and Dave now, although I don't know how much of the goal down the other end you can see from up in the gods there at Sunderland. But from what I understand from you guys, first half was a bit of a missed opportunity, Seb.
Very much so. We dominated the ball for the first sort of 30 minutes or so, and we didn't take our chances. Salina had a couple, didn't he? Two bites at the cherry in one effort, and then Bonn overhead kick back to the keeper's arms, and we should have been two or three up at half time. You know, we're knocking the ball around quite nicely. Aluko was causing problems down our right hand side. He didn't have the pace to, you know, sort of knock it past like Burns would, but he was making space for himself and being intelligent and coming back in field, and Danasian was getting forward nicely, and it was all working quite nicely. We just lacked that attacking edge up front. And Salina had one of those games, you know, where he kind of struggles from the off and you can kind of tell how it's going to be. I don't know if you agree with that, Dave, but how he sort of, you know, when he doesn't start great, his touch isn't brilliant, and you start to think, well, is it one of those days for him?
He's a funny player, Salina, for me. He's just careless. Sometimes I think he's just careless with the ball because he's so technically good. And there were times in the first half he was just sloppy with the ball. And, you know, probably his best chance might have been the one he scuffed through to the keeper, even perhaps more so, well, perhaps equally on a par with the other two. Not that one, the one before, when he scuffs it. He's got so much, and he should just dominate games in that division, shouldn't he? But yeah, he was just, again, just slightly off yesterday. His touch wasn't bad, perhaps making bad decisions. Okay, the chances fell to him and he didn't take them yesterday. Perhaps those chances fall to Bonn and he'll scuff one in the corner. The ones he hit straight at the keeper, he just hit them too cleanly, didn't he? He could have sliced one from the position he was in and it probably ended up in the far corner, because if we'd have scored first yesterday, they would have gone. They were not a good side. In fact, one of the worst sides I've seen this season. First half evidence, they were awful. And Seb would say, they just played like the away team. They certainly played like the away team. There was no way we were going to break on them. They just didn't allow that. They just sat so deep.
You agree with that? The,
absolutely, yeah. They weren't looking forward at all. I think they got in once, and they put 09, I think, put a cross in, and Ross Stewart kind of takes a swing at it, and it goes out for a throw in, and they offered absolutely nothing. I thought the atmosphere was really strange as well. You know, our end was absolutely bouncing, but in the Sunderland end, it was absolutely dead. No, there was nothing at all. It wasn't until probably the 75th, 77th minute they started to get behind the team a little bit. There were a few nasty challenges. They were flying in and taking people out left, right, and centre. I think there were two or three yellows in the first half for them. But from an attacking point of view, they offered absolutely nothing.
Yeah, bad one on Edwards. Really bad one on Edwards.
Yeah, very.
Are you going to come in there, Craig?
Yeah, I would say, well, I managed to fly over to the Netherlands yesterday and watch the match over there on iFollow. So but what was, as Dave was saying about those...
It took me about 10 seconds to get that joke.
Chances falling to Bonn instead of Salina. If they'd have fallen to Chaplin, it'd have... stuck well, away, wouldn't
point.
He?
Good point. Yeah.
You know, he's more of a goal scorer than Salina is. But as Seb was saying about the crowd, you could tell on the iFollow that 10 minutes in, the crowd were getting edgy and starting to moan and groan at Sunderland already 10 minutes in. So you imagine what we'd have done, what they'd done if we'd actually managed to score a bloody goal.
Joe, anything more on the first half?
Well, I sort of mentioned on sort of the commentary, Alex Matthew was just sort of saying, look, these are here for the taking. We've just got to get a goal because they are just not playing well. They're edgy. The crowd is edgy. It's just, you've just got to score now. And if you score now, the game's going to be over. But I say Salina gets on the end of a couple of chances and, like I say, just doesn't find a goal, hits a target with all of them, which sometimes is all you can ask sometimes. But it's just frustrating that they don't go in. But then we're not a side that creates a huge amount of chances. We seem to test the keeper nowhere near enough when we're on top of games. Like when you look at the previous few games, sort of Oxford yesterday, these keepers are making two or three saves and it's sort of enough for us not to score. And you wonder, are we now hitting a run of sort of our goal scoring form has gone a little bit out the window, haven't you, with sort of Oxford not scoring, Colchester not scoring, Oldham getting one in one game, two in the other, not scoring again yesterday.
Why do you think the goals are dried up, Rich?
I don't know. I mean, there is something in the personnel there. I like the attacking ometer and that's on SofaScore, and the bars are really narrow for both teams. They really don't suggest that either team was having too much dominance. There was some sustained stuff. You can see it there. I think this has been a perennial issue throughout the season. And it's, to Joe's point, is that the chances we create are generally the ones we score, and there's very little else, you know. And if we don't score them, like we didn't against Oxford and like we didn't on Saturday, it makes a difference. It's different. We're not rubbish. I mean, this is, Twitter's gone all crazy as it usually does, and I can kind of understand the frustration, but it's not as if on Saturday it sounded like we were second best for large periods and not in the game and not trying to do something. It just feels to me that we're reliant really heavily on Bon. And when Salina isn't at it, there's no chance creation there. Edwards, I don't know whether Seb and Dave, Aluko and Edwards were creating much out on the wide positions. Because if that doesn't happen,
I think Seb got it right. Craig mentioned him. You know, Burns, that game was sort of pretty much crying out for a bit of directness from Burns. Aluko was really good in his touch, really good first half. And he was twisting and dropping his shoulder. He wasn't actually sort of getting away from defenders that well, but he was creating space. A fit Burns, I think, would have made a big difference in there yesterday.
Just coming on what you said, you're absolutely right, actually, to the point. Look, goals per game, 1.9. Big chances per game, 1.8. And obviously, in terms of creating chances, you want the chance creation number to obviously be a fair amount, giving you headroom above the goals per game. So, yeah, good point. Mikey, do you want to come in on?
Sorry, just quickly as well. I think whilst also we've conceded a lot more goals than we should have done on the XGs, when you look at those there, like we're sort of very much on the wrong side of that. On the goal scoring side, we're very much on the right side of it. So I think it was always inevitable that we were going to start conceding less goals, but we were going to start scoring less goals as well.
Well, you've got that nasal thing. Can you just sing me a Cher song?
Do you believe?
Oh, he's picked the one with auto-tune all over it, hey, hasn't he? Deary me. Wow. Mikey, anything to add before all seven of us debate the same refereeing decision?
I was just about to talk about the XG and how we've kind of been outscoring our XG this season, haven't we? We're a little bit like Leicester a couple of seasons ago with Jamie Vardy, and you're just wondering how long... Well, but Macaulay Bonn is kind of... He's like a League One Jamie Vardy for us, isn't he? He's been scoring every time he gets a chance. And you just wondered how long can we maintain this? And I think a few people thought, oh, well, maybe Bonn's going to get an injury, but instead it looks like he's starting to look less effective. Maybe teams are they know a little bit more about him now and how to defend him.
He was starved of service yesterday again. Seb, I don't know what you thought, but yeah, he was feeding again off scraps. He was actually feeding off scraps. All right, he had that rebound, you know, off the Salina chance, but other than that, he had a volley block. He might have had a volley block first half, but. Yeah,
but he tends to feed off scraps when Chaplin's not playing more further at the pitch, not alongside him. But when Salina plays, he drops, he drifts, blah, blah, blah. When Chaplin plays, at least you Bob knows he's going to have someone.
Almost plays as a good striker, doesn't he?
I'm just thinking, if you were to, if we had Ben Swingometer and the question was the most common type of goal that we score, it's not from crosses, is it? We're not getting crosses in the box and headers. Set pieces we score a few of. We're not up through balls or over the top for Bon. So is it just passing in around the 18-yard box and creating a space where someone has a shot inside the 18-yard box? Is that how we...
Transitions and down the sides, isn't it?
It is transition.
We've had a fair few with Burns, haven't we? Burns Lane.
Burns.
Coming from the right wing area.
Yeah.
Into the second half, Dave, we'll come back to you. Our good old friend Aidan McGeady comes in on 63. Paul Cook pulls out Celine and puts Fraser in, Chaplin in for Edwards. Piggott's on at 0-0. How did the second half shake out for you, Dave?
Yeah, the game was petering out. The game was petering out for what would have been for us a disappointing 0-0, honestly. The McGeady coming on, Clements wasn't great. He wasn't terrible, as he said, but it was a couple of times, you know, the ball went under his foot. He just made, well, I remember first half, he just made a bad decision when to attack the ball and miss. Sorry, that's just my light going. That's just my
light. 500, everyone.
Fireworks.
Yeah, he did, you know. So,
what a pro, he's still going.
Oh, yeah, but what was I saying? Yeah, you know, McGeady coming on didn't really have any great effect on the game, did it, really? Not really. He took the corner. He scored the penalty, but barely touched the ball.
They still didn't really offer much at all, did they? I think that the 9 header is the first effort they've had on target, and they were happy to sit back and take the draw.
We'd have been disappointed enough with a 0-0, really. So, as it panned out, it was a kick in the proverbials, really.
I spoke to a couple of Sunderland fans after the game, as well as sort of listening to it, and they seemed to think that the subs for us just sort of killed the game, really, in that the two players we had that were able to carry the ball up the pitch and as the game started to stretch out, Celina and especially Edwards were the players that were sort of getting us 30, 40 yards up the pitch when we had the ball. And then when you sort of replace them for Chaplin and especially, I think, Fraser for Edwards, we just lost that outlet on that side, which drove us up the pitch.
Yeah, Fraser did okay. He created one really decent chance for Chaplin, which I'm not sure what he did with that, Seb, did he? It was neither a shot or a cross. He just wellied it across the box, didn't he? It's a weird one.
Yeah, I'm guessing he's trying to go across the keeper, wasn't he? But he
I think he was trying to shape it and hit it with outside of his foot and hit it with his instep. But Fraser did okay. But you lost that movement up the pitch, obviously, when he came on. But Edwards, I thought yesterday, for me, he had one of his better games.
He was very unlucky, wasn't he? That one in the first half where he gets to the round about the penalty spot and, you know, the two Sunderland players are there to block the shot. But I thought his decision making was better yesterday. And I was quite surprised he was the one that got hooked, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
He had hacked a couple of times, though, hadn't he?
Yeah, true.
Let's go to said kick in the ghoulies on minute 85 here and this opening goal corner from Pritchard, I think, and it's a horrible goal, isn't it? Walton gets lost, 3 blue shirts. As Dave said in our fabled WhatsApp group, like a weak handshake, this header, wasn't it? Craig, do you want to pick that mess apart?
Yeah, well, I was chatting to the guys, like as you did pre-match, Ben, the What the Fork podcast guys, and just saying to them this morning that, you know, Walton, you've been hanging your hat on Walton for the last however many weeks since he's been in the team. He's been coming and collecting crosses. He's been coming, you know, strong from corners. And then just as a complete brain fart in this instance, there's no real need for him to come for it. You saw on the freeze frame there was NCR, there's Edmondson, there's Evans, probably three of our taller players on the pitch, isn't there, at that particular time. 09 doesn't even jump. He just drops on his head. He's near the corner of the 6-yard box. It's a weak as piss header that just bounces into the floor and almost bounces over the bar. But just a horrible, soft, weak goal to concede.
Soft one, Mikey.
Yeah, and Dave said that McGeady didn't make much of an impact, but he did get an assist and a goal, didn't he?
No, that's what I said. Pritchard on, and he got a penalty, but other than that, he barely touched
Pritchard.
It's a terrible corner, isn't it? It's
floaty corner. Floaty one.
They expect to be headed back over, isn't it?
They've just got stuck under the ball, and I think when the goalkeeper comes out, it causes confusion. It's a lot harder to get up for a header as a defender when your goalkeeper's coming.
Do you know what got
out.
Me there? There's so much traffic in our box. I still would get don't get. Well, we just don't leave whoever. Sorry, was a Piggott on them. Okay, for height, but just Samuel Chaplin. Just leave him up top. So that means two of their players are out of the box. You had so much traffic to get through then. Yeah, it was a bad decision from Walton. There was a lot going on there. And yeah, it was a soft goal because, as Seb would say, he'd come for a corner. I can remember at least one, if not two corners, he came and caught as he normally would, didn't he?
Yeah, stick someone on the post. You put your money on him to come out, claim it, and you know, settle everything down. He did it a couple of times in the first half, and I guess he's got us out of jail a couple of times. That big save away at Wickham, didn't he? So, you know, he's played really well for us, but yeah, it was just weak all round.
It's a good point.
Especially
if you're bringing everyone back.
Oh come on, boys! It doesn't need a that. It's a rubbish floaty corner. They've got a man on the near post.
Well, no, in general,
doesn't
in general.
Need a man on the far
have,
post.
Have a word with Francis Jeffers. The defensive set piece coach in Mastermind.
Right.
But it's
are you
one
ready
thing
for...
on the other, Ben. You either leave a player up or you have
I agree
a
with
player
that.
On each post.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, because you're doing...
Otherwise, you're doubling up.
But it's pretty normal to have one on the near post and,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
you can watch the corner come over. You know the most dangerous area on a corner is hard into the near post,
coming
isn't
in,
it?
Yeah.
When
yeah.
The Martin Wackham special.
All the against Norwich, yeah. All the in a game where his set plays were exemplary, Dave, weren't they? When we talk about our favourite
one was good.
Oh, you can see that now, Dave. After all these years.
Right. Speaking about conceding, let's go around the room. So let me explain my understanding of the handball law. So we had a clarification in March from IFAB that said. As the interpretation of handball incidents has not always been consistent due to incorrect applications of the law, i.e. everything was a penalty up until about March last season. The members confirmed that not every touch of a player's hand arm with the ball is an offence. In terms of the criterion of the hand arm making a player's body unnaturally bigger, it was confirmed that referees should continue to use their judgment in determining the validity of the hand arm's position in relation to the player in that specific instance. So this is another beautiful example of IFAB writing the most fluffiest language around their laws. So basically the referee is never, ever wrong and you can't argue that the referee is wrong. So what we do know is that not every occasion of the ball hitting the arm in the penalty box is a penalty, which I think we all agree is good. I remember a ridiculous one against Newcastle on Sky last season. And the referee is to use his judgment in terms of the specific situation as to what the player is doing in terms of whether his arm is in an unnatural position, i.e. it's not uniform. It's not, oh, here's this silhouette. It's what is the situation? So the situation, as I understand it here, is the ball is not going in the goal and it's been smashed at Nsiala's arm from about probably a foot away. And he turns and should we get this still up? Let's have a look there. Well, what do you reckon, Joe? 2 feet?
About a metre.
Give me a yard.
So 3 feet. Okay. 3 feet away. And Nsiala tries to turn his body and clearly is trying not to get his arm in the way. So I think you can guess where I'm falling on this, that this interpretation of the arm being in an unnatural position, for my money, is not a very good one. But I do agree with Paul Cook that by this point, it didn't particularly matter and the game was lost. Who are we going to go to first on the laws? Joe, go on.
I personally think it probably is a penalty, even though it's harsh, because when he turns, his arm is sort of like... there it ends up quite far away from his body and does directly block the shot effectively. But I'd be, like I say, it was 1-0. We won't get back into the game. It was game over at this point, so it's easier to maybe be a little bit more clear minded on it. But it just felt to me that when you see it in real time, you just think, what on earth is he giving? Because it just looks like it hits him almost in the face and just goes up in the air, and then you don't really consider anything more of it. But when you slow it down, depending on the angle the ref's got, I didn't see him on the freeze frame. He does seem to, his arm does look quite far away from his body. And it,
my problem is, we shouldn't be judging these on freeze frames. The situation lasts for more than a frozen, you know, a frozen picture. I think for my money, and I know I've said a lot already, I think the only way that's a penalty is if the ball's going in the goal. And I think it's going to hit Dave or Seb in the top tier.
It's hard for the ref to tell whether that was going into the goal or not from where it was. But I mean, you normally look at the reaction of the players, don't you? And no one really appeals. But you don't know whether that's because of the game state or whether they don't
get a penalty. Stuart's reaction is interesting. Who hits it? He doesn't appeal. And then when the ref gives it, he's giving it all. But he doesn't appeal for it.
Let's just get some more opinions on this. Arm in unnatural position or not. Richard.
You're not going to like this because I'm going to agree with Joe. And I can't really sum it up much more apart from the only thing that I would say, I agree with Joe about the position of Nciala's arm or hand, is that most defenders in that position these days are now tuned in their brains to have their arms behind their back, don't they? They understand to avoid that exact situation that even it just catches a flailing arm or hand. They usually tuck their arms behind their back in Nciala. Maybe I know it's quite quick action, but I think most defenders in that situation know to do that now instinctively. So I agree with Joe that it's probably in the way that's been interpreted is fair by the referee. Is it harsh? Yes, it is. Does it matter now? Probably not.
I don't think VAR would overturn it.
Can I push back on that? I don't think players put their... I think players put their arms behind their back when they're 6 to 10 yards away from a shot that they might have to turn.
Okay.
I think Nciala is engaging in a tackle, and I don't think you put your arms. But it's all a fun debate, isn't it? Yeah. Mikey?
I think it's one of those that in the Premier League, if that was not given, VAR would not have given it as a penalty.
Because it's not clear and obvious.
Because it's not clear and obvious. VAR, that's not really what the debate is here. But had let me finish, Joe. If the ref had have given it, I think VAR probably would have gone along with it, because you could argue that it is a slightly unnatural position. But like you say, Ben, because the ball is flying up into the second tier, and also it's a little bit harsh on people with long arms and big hands as well. And I'm going to stick up for Nciala there on that one.
Greg?
Yeah, it's just umpires calling it, Dave. It's the cricket. They'll just back the referee, regardless of talking about VAR, whether it would overturn it or not. So hopefully these things even themselves out and we get one in 4 weeks' time when it's 0-0 after 80 minutes against Sunderland at home. And yeah, they can be as magnanimous as we are when we get given it.
And the two men in the stadium, Seb?
At the time, I was astonished when it happened in real time. I don't know what you thought, Dave. I couldn't work out what he'd given it for at first. But then when you look at the freeze frames, I guess the arms are unnatural. And because it doesn't really matter, I don't think anyone's that fussed about it. Had that been the winning goal, obviously, Christ, we'd be going about it for days and weeks on end. But at that point, it, like Joe said, it is game over. And looking back on it, the hand is unnatural. But at the time, I was astounded.
Dave, last word on that.
Not a penalty in a million years. The law's an arse. The law's an absolute arse, honestly.
Yeah, I guess that's the other argument, isn't it?
I wouldn't even got that. The law is wrong. That was comfortably missing all three stumps, Craig. Comfortably missing all three stumps, mate.
Mikey, on your point on the law, is there not a space for an indirect free kick in the box for that? If it is not a deliberate handball, but it has hit his arm in an unnatural position and the ball's not going in the goal.
With that, aren't you?
Sorry, Joe, go on.
You almost get to like hockey with that, as a sort of like a short corner as opposed to a penalty flick where... If it hits your feet, it is a foul, regardless of how deliberate or undeliberate it is. But a short corner is a lot less likely to score from. It just seems that the penalty kick is a... When they were bringing it in, when it was almost, if the ball hits your arm, regardless of the situation, it just didn't work because a penalty is such a big...
0.77.
Such a big award, isn't it? And I don't know. It just seems...
I'm still not convinced Lee Evans would miss the first man with a short corner, to be fair.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect you while online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Do you remember our indirect free kick at Sunderland last season?
Oh,
Oh,
my God, yeah.
Absolute gold. Well, there you go.
Hopefully, we've played every side of the debate, so whatever you think, one of us has said what you think. Therefore, the podcast as a whole is right on this because we've literally played out every possible scenario. Unfortunately, the scenario for Ipswich is a 2-0 defeat. Let me just throw up the numbers real quick and we'll get your final thoughts. 61% for Town on the possession, 13 shots to 10 in Town's favour, 4 shots to 2 on target. In Town's favour. Oh, 6 corners to 5 in Sunderland's. But I don't like that one there. 3 big chances to 1 in Sunderland's favour. Yes, I understand the penalty classes as a big chance that maybe was created in a slightly spurious way. Let's just quickly go back to David and Seb. Seb, final thoughts?
It was a carbon copy of the game 2 years ago. Dominated the first half. And if you don't take your chances, then you're always liable to mess things up in the second half, aren't you? They were absolutely there for the taking. Should have been a couple of goals up at half time. And had we been, I think we'd have seen it out quite easily, to be honest.
David?
Yeah, pretty much the same. Very disappointing. Yeah, we score, they fold, and we probably win that 2 or 3 nil. One observation I would make, George Edmondson is going to be an absolute beast of a player for us. Absolute, what he is already. And if there's a better defender in League One, well, he must be one hell of a player. He was outstanding again yesterday.
Let's go to Ben's Swingometer Part 2. So sharpen your brains up right now. We'll go in a different order for Ben's Swingometer this time. So we're going to go with Dave first, because I know he loves these questions and makes me explain them 10 times. But we've already established that Ipswich are 25 places lower than the end of podcast weekend number one. But if we factor in Luton Town, what is the total swing between Ipswich's drop and Luton's increase? So add the two together, as in a minus and a plus. Add them together. It's a big number. Tell us what the swing between Ipswich and Luton since the final whistle on podcast day one is, Dave.
They may have even been non-league then. Were they?
I'm
going to
help.
They're
in League Two.
League Two. 58.
58, Seb?
Yeah.
69.
Joe?
Oh, my numbers come out as 68 as well. So 72.
Craig?
62.
Richard?
66.
Mikey?
69.
Me.
Who said 72?
Me.
Joe Fares is the closest, and this is going to make you cringe a little bit. Wow. So, on August the 9th...
I'll tell you what also happens, though, with Luton, is we play them one season, and we send the reserves out and knock them out of the League Cup. And then a couple of years later, they send the reserves out and beat us.
Yeah, wow. Sensational. So, on August the 9th, 2015, obviously Ipswich were 9th in the Championship. Luton were 13th in League Two, after drawing their first game that season. Luton are currently, if I've done my numbers correctly, I think Joe's still going to be close, even though I haven't. They're currently 11th in the Championship. So they've gone up 50 places and we've gone down 25 since the podcast started. Ergo, a swing of 75 places in the 92. There you go. That was Ben's Swingometer. If you never, ever want to hear from Ben Swingometer ever again, at Blue Monday ITFC, and you can ban it. Shall we go as I try and scroll my phone for the questions tweet. Shall we go to some questions? Can anyone pad for me quickly? Someone.
Yeah, but you ever thought that our demise has been purely down to the Blue Monday podcast?
It has come up
many times.
The other thing we do need to mention. Sorry to jump on that point, because I do agree with it. By the way, I often wake up in a cold sweat at night and think about that. We need to talk about one team that did win 2-0 in a big game, and that was ITFC women's team, who defeated Southampton in a vital top of the table clash. Goals from Natasha Thomas and Zoe Barrett, and they scored at exactly the right times. They scored twice. They held on for a late onslaught, and they now find themselves top of the league outright, even though Southampton have got three games in hand on them, and are set up very well as long as they can maintain their form for a possible punt at promotion. So congrats to the ITFC women. And Abby Lafayette, sponsored by Blue Monday, an assist and a pre-assist as well. So congrats to them.
It's not like a McGeady assist, but like a Pritchard assist.
A proper assist, yeah. No loopy nonsense from Abby. She drills it straight in.
It was such a massive game as well, because I think Southampton have got quite a superior goal difference to us in the league this year. So had they won today, if both the teams carried on their form at the end of the season, we'd be needing... It could have been all over. I know we're playing the penultimate game, but we could have been needing to win that like 14-0 to overtake the goal difference or something silly like that. So such a huge win there. So well done to the girls.
Another header from Natasha Thomas as well. She's unbelievable in the air, isn't she?
Note, Ben, do you remember one of the first pods and I was raving about a player from the opposition and he wasn't even playing that day?
It was Luke Freeman. You thought he was still at Stevenage, was our second podcast game. And I tell you, right, can anyone do it? Who scored a headed goal against Stevenage in the League Cup centre half? Can anyone get it?
Josh Yulworth.
Oh, well done, Joe. I didn't think anyone would get that one. In fact, I've got one more quiz question for you. And this will be fastest finger first, okay? Since we've been running the pod, and I can only think of one, which player, and hold your hand up if you know the answer, which player has registered a goal for Ipswich and a goal for Norwich since we've been running the pod? Some blank faces.
Dead air.
Scratching his nose.
It's a crime.
Dead air is always a crime.
Is it no goal? Or...
I said registered.
Oh, I don't know, Tyrone Mings.
Have I stumped you all?
Yep.
I should not read the answer. It is an own goal. And the answer is Mike van der Hoorn of Swansea City, who in the 2018-19 season scored an own goal for Swansea against Ipswich and an own goal for Swansea against Norwich. So unless some clever dick's going to get me on the Twitter, the only player to register a goal for Ipswich and for Norwich, I say only, the only one on my list is Mike van der Hoorn, the Dutch centre-half. Good player, actually. I'm surprised. Went off to FC Utrecht. Thought he could have done a job in the Championship there, but that's not for this show. Mikey, questions are for this show, and this is Alex Hare. Our goal tally is starting to fade as a relevant stat now, and the more nuanced issue is the front four don't play as effective in a collective force. Do you think it's the right players with the wrong tactics or simply wrong on both counts? Mikey?
I don't know if you can say it's the wrong tactics because we have scored so many goals over the course of the season and the tactics haven't changed. But I think he is still desperately trying to find that perfect four. And I think Carl Edwards' defensive abilities is what's keeping him in the team at the moment, in my opinion. I think if we had our most effective players out there, he probably wouldn't be out there. It'd probably be Selena on the left with Chaplin playing as that secondary striker in behind Bon. But yeah, it probably does need freshening up. And it's a difficult one as well because Wes Burns has been fantastic, but so is Aluko, and neither of them really can play on the other side. So you can't get both of those in the team at the same time.
Craig, what do you think on the front four?
Exactly that. Exactly the same as Mikey, in that we're still seemingly trying to find that right balance of personnel, aren't we? And it would be nice if poor old Joe Piggott had been knocking down the door and desperate to be to be needing a start, or, you know, starting ahead of Bond, as Rich says, that, you know, Bond's been off the ball slightly in the last two or three, four matches, understandably, you know. It'd just be nice to bring in and have the and for Cook to have the trust in Piggott to be able to start a match as a like for like replacement, as we are, you know, capable of doing in the three behind. I say it'd just be nice to get Burns back. We just need a bit more directness. I think that's what we missed at the weekend, although albeit Luko played well, but he stops play a little bit. He drifts inside a little bit rather than getting around the outside and getting those crosses in, from which we have been relatively successful.
When you said he stops playing, drifts inside, I thought of Jack Grealish then, and I thought that's okay, but I assume you mean it in a slightly different way.
Well, it is kind of that. Is it like we're comparing Ipswich players in League One to elite Premier League players again, but it is a similar way of playing out on the wing, isn't it? He's almost, like, to use a basketball term, he's almost like a point guard. He's there to slow it down and actually look up and create space for everyone else. It's
similar to what Fraser would do on the left hand side, really.
Yeah, lovely stuff. Richard, I'll fire this one to you. Flim Flam film fan. When you actually read the letters, it makes sense. Do you think Town players suffer an overconfidence in their teammates' ability? By which I mean, do they sometimes overcomplicate things like the final ball and rely on others to get them out of trouble? And I'll parlay into that. Paul Cook wants rehearsed goals that are practiced more than off-the-cuff goals. I think you would agree. Is that where the question is going to?
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, I recall being really impressed, actually, with the first behind-the-scenes training video when Cook came in telling people where to stand, wasn't he? So I agree with you there that I assume that a lot of our attacking plays are drilled, and there are players in there who possibly think they might know best, or, you know, I don't want to pick on Selina because we've been a bit down on him today.
And he's Oxford, the off-the-cuff player, though, isn't he?
But he is exactly right, and when it works, he's unbelievable, and he's a different class in this division.
That changed the game against Wickham, him playing off the cuff in the first half when it swung, yep, didn't it?
Absolutely did. And Fleetwood, you know, he came on, kind of caused a little bit of confusion with our own players, but then was in the right place at the right time and has that instinct. So when Selina's top of his game, he brings everyone along with him. When he's not, things start to fall apart. And so I don't want to pick on him, but I think there's something in that. It's interesting that Cook doesn't change the team, though, because Connor Chaplin is the alternate and he's a Cook guy, isn't he? He's one of his guys. And if he wanted that discipline, then he'd be playing Chaplin, isn't he? He's not. So I don't know. It's an interesting thought. I don't really know if I've answered the question. I think I have.
Interesting, actually, Rich. The guys from the Sunderland podcast are saying that every time Chaplin plays against them, he has an absolute belter of a game, whether that been for Coventry or for Portsmouth or for whoever. Said he always, always plays well against them as well.
Dave, I'd just be interested in getting your take in the off-the-cuff versus rehearsed debate, because I bet you're in the off-the-cuff camp. But I saw Bournemouth score a goal today that was literally out of a training man. You could literally see it drawn and very, very effective. But it does seem to be the way they're headed, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you're right. He is that player that can give you that, as I alluded to earlier. He has got that bit of that extra bit of class about him. We all know that. But it's just the last two games. Well, did he hold him? I didn't see. But the last two games, you know, the Oxford game last week, just wasn't quite on it. We said on the pod, he just wasn't quite there. And yesterday, again, similar, you know, just one or two bad decisions. You think, okay, let's put the chances to one side, because, like I said, he probably hits them too sweetly. You know, he scuffed one, he scores. At least he's in those positions, you know. So yeah, he is a sort of bit of a, what you describe him as, a potential talisman. And potentially, look, he's probably the best player in the division. Potentially, just hasn't quite showed it yet for me, not yet.
This question takes us quite nicely to the next game, Joe. This is Steve, who looks very much like a Rotherham fan following us. Batten down the hatches and get your tin helmets on, lads. The Millers are on their way, and at League One level, they're pretty good, aren't they, Joe, on Tuesday night?
Yeah, it's interesting. I was speaking to someone in the game recently, and they were saying that the difference between the Championship and League One, the biggest difference is that just the physicality of the leagues, yeah, just the athleticism, and just that step up is just huge now. And if you listen to I think Rotherham went to Cambridge on Saturday, beat them, and Mark Bonner after the game was just talking about their sort of physicality, their athleticism, their speed, their that they're basically a championship team, a low end championship team in League One now, I think, aren't they? They were very unlucky last year not to stay up, I thought. And had, I think it sort of came down to just having a really, really tough run of fixtures where they had to play something like 10 games.
They played 4 games in 8 days at one point. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they had the most COVID cancellations of any team in the Championship as well.
Yeah.
Right?
No, I think they are a good side. They've lost a couple, but yeah, they are. And they are absolutely purring at the moment, aren't they? When you look at their form recently, and it's a really, really tough game. And I think if we don't come out of this week with 6 points, I think we're going to be in a really tough position in the league. You look at the league table, and we're 7 points off 6th, even though 6th have got 2 games in hand on us, 7 points off 5th have got a game in hand on us, 10 points off 4th. Without winning tomorrow or Tuesday, we're in a real, real tough position for the playoffs. And we could be at Christmas sort of 12, 13 points off the playoffs if we don't start picking up wins from where we are. And you look at the people sort of isolated, this run of fixtures is where we need to start picking wins up. And we've sort of won one, lost one, drawn one. And now we've got Rotherham, probably the toughest of the games in it. But then, would it surprise anyone if we beat Rotherham 3-0 on Tuesday? I don't think it would, because I think we're so...
I'll take that surprise.
But yeah, I think we're inconsistent is one word, but you just don't know what team is going to turn up. And you see some of the performances we put in, and they're really good, but Rotherham... Not looking forward to that, and I worry what that league table is going to look like come, because our game is on Sunday this week. I worry what that league table is going to look like come sort of Sunday morning.
Indeed,
I've got 4 little bits for you, Ben, if you want, just to illustrate how scary Tuesday is. Rotherham won 3-1 yesterday with their leading scorer, Michael Stewart, suspended.
Michael Smith,
12 goals.
Second best Michael Smith on this podcast.
You're exactly right. He was suspended yesterday, so they didn't need him and still beat Cambridge comfortably. Most shots in the league taken, least shots conceded in the league, and 11 undefeated at the moment.
So, can you correct for headers on most shots? That might make that stat look better.
I might need to come back to you on that one. But yeah, I had a quick nose on who scored and scared myself, really. So.
Yeah. And I think someone said they conceded 5 goals in their last 10 league games, I think, as well.
Right. I think 4 of them were against Fleetwood, weren't they? Or is that where your stat there?
Yeah, it might have been where it's just a thought after that. But started. So yeah, we may well score 3, but we'd need to have at least 3 shots.
Seb, anything on Rotherham?
Just like everyone said already, you know, we have to start winning these games because of the awful start we had. That's the problem, you know. And if we get a decent start to the season, the point against Oxford last weekend is okay. I guess you kind of accept an unlucky defeat at Sunderland because, you know, you're not playing this massive catch-up that we are doing. And at some point, we're going to have to start beating these sides to drag them back down. But Rotherham are so schooled at this level. I think on the first pre-match show of the season, I predicted them for the title because they are just so schooled at this level. And like, we might beat them 3-0, but if I was a betting man, I'd probably predict another 1 or 2-0 loss personally.
And I think for the first time in about 500 episodes there, Joe tried to do the proper continuity that he was actually speaking on a Monday, because we don't really do that. It's quite a badly named podcast, this actually, isn't it? Considering it's like recorded on a Sunday and a Wednesday and a Thursday every week. But there we go. I was taught when I was younger, don't break your arm slapping yourself on the back. So tune out now if you don't want any of that stuff. But we're just going to celebrate 502 episodes. We asked for some memories here. This is from David. And Dave, this is a bit of a bad memory for you. Ben having to dissect the loss to Norwich the same weekend that Dave hurt himself cycling.
Yeah, I remember that. That was the Norwich game. Awaiting my operation. It was the Madison goal.
I was on the point of firing you then. I thought that was a distinct lack of commitment. Not to...
My arm was literally hanging off on that Sunday until he repaired it on the Monday. It literally was. And I remember watching it in my hospital bed as Madison drilled that one in from the edge of the box.
Oh, stop it. Richard, can you address the think walk?
Think what? Yeah, well, I do like business BS terms. I like to, you know, run some ideas up the flagpole and see who salutes.
You want to listen to some Lee Johnson press conferences?
Hey, you just beat us, Craig.
Yeah, I need to find that Lee Johnson training video from Marbella or whatever it is. That's brilliant. It's Brent. Yeah, but every now and then we like to fry some stuff in the Think Wok, you know, and see what quality stuff comes out.
Richard, also pertaining to you, would you like to tell us about your tantrum in Frankie and Benny's in Oxford?
Yeah, so the key, if you ever book a table, is make sure you all arrive at the same time.
And I don't arrive first.
Early, like an hour early, and finish before you even arrive. Yeah. I've got over it, but thanks for bringing it back up, Seabass.
You should say that. I didn't bring it up. Andrew brought it up.
Is it Andrew? I thought it was Seabass, but I might be wrong.
Seabass. There you go. Mikey, just tell us about your podcast journey and how you got involved.
Well, I failed to deliver on all of the promises that I made, didn't I, Ben? I sort of pitched myself as the guy that was going to interview podcasters from opposition teams.
And we stopped doing that, didn't we? That was way too much effort, Mike.
Yeah. Windows 95 laptop as well, with the worst editing software in the world. So, yeah, it was I think you thought, oh, here's Mikey, he works in sports media. He'll be a really good addition for all of the editing and all of that stuff. But I was absolutely useless.
Almost the perfect addition then, in the context of the team we cover, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. Good on paper. Yeah,
good history.
Yeah, great history. Good on paper. Talk's a good game. But I think,
Mikey, we should have a debate on your new boots, mate. I'm loving your new boots.
You need to tell us what they are, Mikey.
They're Puma Kings. Now I'm in my 30s. I've decided to get some Puma Kings, get some real boots.
They're the football equivalent of Ben's stage Cuban heels.
they'll do well to be that. You asked me if I'd retired those Cuban heels. Joe, I don't remember. How did you get involved?
I can't remember, really. It seems so long ago, but I think we just had a long chat on the phone one day, didn't we, about
did it? Did I then dominate 73% of the conversation?
I think it was basically a podcast. It needed to be released, but it's been
someone to help me with that idiot Dave? Did he say that?
No.
I do remember that Ben did ask me if I was available the day when you broke your arm, when it was just the two of you.
But now it's coming out.
But I was about 8 points
deep. Right, CNN.
And I thought, for sort of my debut on the podcast, I probably shouldn't do it at this stage. So I've been in the pub since about 8:30 that morning because it was an early kickoff.
And Craig, how many times have you threatened to quit over me deliberately mispronouncing your surname?
No, I've taken it all in my stride now. I just take it in the spirit it's been offered.
He's now changed it by deed poll.
Although the spelling's the same.
Yeah, B-O-U-G-H is now the new spelling. Seb, were you the last one in?
I'm not sure. I think me and Craig joined about the same time. I think there was a season, wasn't there, where we had a whole host of games up in the north and you guys looked at a fixture list and sort of went, sod that, we're not travelling that far up. So let's get ourselves a northern correspondent to tackle those horrible away days in horrible, horrible towns.
I think a lot to do with my having to get up at 4:50 a.m. every morning and having zero time to do anything at any point. But hey-ho, thanks to COVID, I don't have that job anymore. Every cloud. And David Diamond, podcast legend in from day one. Your reflections on 500 episodes.
Yeah, amazing, really. Just great that the other guys have sort of come on board to allow us to have that continuity, because it was turning out at one point to be a continuity nightmare, wasn't it? I mean, we're ending up, you were performing all over Europe and stuff like that, and we were getting delayed at airports, fog bound and stuff like that, and we were recording pods at 5:30 on a Monday morning around your flat, things like that.
Would you believe this was before remote recording and stuff?
I was driving from London to Ipswich
to record a podcast, which would be madness. Unheard of.
Absolute madness, wasn't it? But yeah, who would have thought it? But no, it's great. But loved every minute of it.
We'll give a very gushing thank you to obviously all of the guys on the screen now, who are all a great part of the Blue Monday podcast. But of course, Well, no, that's not strictly true. It wouldn't be nothing without you. And look, podcasters get a bit of stick for thinking that they know more than other fans. We don't think that. Frankly, we would still be having these conversations without hitting the record button or putting them out, because that's what football fans do. And that's what we do every single week. And we thank people profusely, especially if you've lasted, how many years is it now? 6 years or whatever, 500 episodes. There's probably somebody out there who's listened to every single episode. And I think it's very apt, Joe, you're on most of them now, aren't you? I think it's very apt that we've lost, you know, we've lost the kind of difficult game, you know, that really would have been quite exciting if we'd won on, well, we're celebrating our 500th episode. I think that sums up the first 6 years. So we do thank everybody for listening. And I think that's just about the show. Richard, can you just quickly pod the interview with the author of the Paul Mariner biography, please?
Yeah, Mark Donaldson, it's still available. The book is now available in the shop as well, and we've put a link out. But Mark will be in Planet Blue. I think it's 5:45 for about an hour or so before the Rotherham game. And I'm sure if our pod is anything to go by, happy to chat as well. He was brilliant. I just turned up, and as you said, press record, and heard fascinating insights about how the book was created, but also stories about Ipswich Town days for Paul Mariner that, you know, none of us probably would have heard if the book hadn't come out. And even more poignant because of his sad passing as well. So go and have a chat with Mark on Tuesday. And if you want to listen to our pod, available still on the feed, YouTube and podcast in the usual places, I can actually, there you go, there's a website, bluemondayitfc.co.uk. All the details there.
And Seb, you're going to be back at the weekend talking about Crewe.
Yeah, Crewe obviously being a Sunday game. Yeah, Sunday game this time. So we're still debating, aren't we, if we do it live Friday night or live Saturday night. But we'll get the logistics together. And yeah, Sunday afternoon kickoff. And like Joe says, hopefully by that point, we're going to be looking at 4 to 6 points.
Brilliant stuff. Right, I need a pithy last word from each of you. Mikey Penty-Smith.
Get me out of here.
He wants to go watch TV. Richard.
I haven't got anything apart from thanks, everyone. It's great. Here's to 500 more.
Wow. We better have finished in the top Premier League, of any division by then, I tell you. Craig?
Well, that was going to be my question, actually. 500 gone, 500 to go. So let's quick calculation. What, 3.5 years? Where will we be? End of 2024, summer of 2025.
Ninth in League One.
We'll be in the middle of League One.
We've been where in between, though?
We'll be in the middle of League Two saying, relegation has been a good thing for the club, and we'll just have this is a transition season, and we'll see me back in the, see me back
we
in League One.
We got to go to Forest Green Rovers once,
Yeah, it's a good result at Forest Green, and at Paul Hurst, he was always a good manager when we're coming up against him for Grimsby or whoever. Joe, any last words from you?
I can't quite get the joke to work, but something about a Proclaimer song, isn't it? Where Richard is talking about 500 pods and 500 more, but so my pithy comment is a joke that I can't get to work because my head is in a fuzz.
Yeah, you just got to get Letter from America into the punchline somewhere. Right there. That's a joke that only Dave got. There we go. Seb. Oh, Craig will have got it. Popmaster head.
No, great. Yeah, let's hopefully have a decent end to this season and see where we are in 500 pods time. I'm going to guess bottom of the championship.
Right, now, being these guys are belligerent and don't do as I say, I'll try and set this up in the most obvious terms. That's going to let Dave say a particular word and then Mikey say a particular phrase.
I've got a couple of things to say.
People only want to hear you say crap, by the way, Dave.
Well, I know what you want to hear me say. There was two things from yesterday. One, and Seb will be blissfully unaware, I had a Partridge moment with Seb. Didn't see Seb yesterday until he was walking out of the stadium beneath me, walking out of the out of the bed. And I was, Seb!
And my mate said,
"Who are you shouting at? Seb!" And I said, "Yeah, you can't hear me." So he said, "Seb can't hear me." And I heard the best comment in Durham last night. We were out and we bumped into a few Sunderland fans, two or three Sunderland fans. And one was slightly worse to where he said, "Hey, Ipswich," he said, "you're a canny side," he said, "but you were all fart and no shite."
And shite is another word to describe Dave.
Crap.
Mikey, finish it off.
Be wish what you careful for.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nuggets and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.